big construction jobs. And because of, as far as he explains to me, if I understand it right, because of NAFTA, the sourcing of everything has to be from within North America or some such thing, that, like, down to the
This is a top to, you know, what we use on stage, but it's very, very special because if you can see,
yeah,
the numbers all go to 11. Look, right across the board, 11, oh, 11,
and most of
11,
the amps go up to 10.
Exactly.
Does that mean it's louder? Is it any louder?
Well, it's one louder, isn't it? It's not 10. You see, most blokes are going to be playing at 10. You're on 10 here, all the way up, all the way up,
yeah,
all the way up. You're on 10 on your guitar. Where can you go from there? Where?
I don't know.
Nowhere, exactly. What we do is, if we need that extra push over the cliff, you know what we do?
Put it up to 11.
11, exactly. One louder.
Why don't you just make 10 louder and make 10 be the top number and make that a little louder?
These go to 11.
Welcome to Conversation Radio's Lean, Mean, and Green Show right here on the Horn. It's Foxed Up with John Fox, where we turn the conversation to conservation. Foxed Up is brought to you by B1 Louder Productions in Sydney, Australia, and CityNet, citynet.net. B1 Louder by ringing 877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 877-443-2366, or use your free minutes by dialing direct 304-658-5453. Yeah. Your host, the ranting, head-banging hippie, John Fox.
Hey, hey, everyone. Welcome aboard. Foxed Up here for a Wednesday night, Thursday morning, or if you're down here in Sydney, Australia, Thursday afternoon. Sorry about yesterday. You know, it's an unfortunate reality that... This show kind of takes place during my daytime, and if, you know, work calls, and work called. So, if you were listening to the horn section, the first few minutes of it were me just rambling on the fact that I had a great conversation earlier today with Mr. Travis Meeks from the project Days of the New, and those of you who have been longtime listeners to this program, you all know that I'm a huge fan of what this guy does. So it was kind of a no-brainer that today's track of the day would be a Days of the New track. But I did have a really great opening conversation with Travis, and we're going to work on this relationship and have a little bit more, a few more chats amongst ourselves, and hopefully sometime in the future we'll be able to get him on the program, because... I found him an interesting character. So far, what I got to know in about 35 minutes of chatting with him, you ever get the impression that they're, you know, someone that you've never met before, but because of their art or their work or whatever it is that drives them every day, that you feel like you might actually, if you ever did get to talk to them, that you'd get on. And this is how I always felt, and I wasn't disappointed. In fact, I was thrilled at how just easy it was. And I love talking to musicians. I so love talking to musicians about what they do and why they do it. And if they can actually put that into words, that's an amazing thing. So, but anyway, I will keep you all posted on how that all develops, I tell you, they were just today loading into the studio to begin the new album. So we might be able to get progress reports as it goes. Could be very, very interesting. So I figured when I was talking to Travis, I mentioned the second record, the Green record, that I think so far out of what he's done overall, that's my favorite. And because it's just big. It's huge. And his comment to me was, he said, well, if you like the Green album, man, he said, the new one, which will be titled Purple, is like the Green album on steroids. And all I can say is that that just made me want the album to be complete and I want to hear it. So I figured today I'd pull a track that I don't believe that I've played before off of Days of the New Two, also known as Green. And the thing about this album is that, you know, it's not mixed to be singles. It's kind of an ongoing tapestry, so sometimes the transitions between songs aren't exact. So you'll hear that this starts slightly abruptly, but it's because the other song bumps right up, the song before just kind of rams right up into it. However, you'll be able to hear great backing vocals. I can't remember the girl's name who's singing on this. She ended up going and doing one of those, girly project band things sometime after that. And something like the Pussycat Dolls or something like that I would never even look at. But this is just a really, really neat song, and I think it shows some of the what I think is the obvious Celtic influence that ended up creeping into the guy's music. So without further ado, off the Green album, Days of the New Two, The Phobics of Tragedy. Roll it, Bob. Thank you. Yeah, and what is that back masking all about? I might have to go and flip that file around in an editor one day and see if it actually is anything, or is it just the track done as a loop, as a backwards fade. I don't know, but I think that's a really great example of what the project is all about. You know, it's a huge sound. The guitar work is fantastic. He makes up a lot of his own tunings, it seems. There's some very, very unusual tunings in a lot of the music, which I love. I love when people tear down boundaries and say, yeah, you told me I had to do it like this, but, you know, it also works like this, and it allows me to do this thing and that thing and the other thing that I couldn't do that way. It's like talking about Jeff Healey, may he rest in peace, who passed away just a couple of days ago. I remember, God, it's got to be over 20 years ago, seeing an interview with him and talking about his early gigging days and one of his first gigs. He, you know, they show up and he sits down to play, you know, and he played blues and jazz guitar with the guitar laid out on his lap, playing over the top, because it's just how, being blind, he found his way to playing the guitar. And some guy, a club owner, whatever, comes up to him and says, you can't play like that. As though he was breaking some rock-solid law of guitar, that you had to strap it on a particular way and have your left hand come from the underneath of the neck. And, you know, I think his response was something to the effect of, you know, seems to work for me, you know, and rip something out and shut the guy up. But anyway, I will keep you posted on what happens with Mr. Travis Meeks in the future. And I was very happy to hear that after 3 or 4 years of, you know, the waiting, that this Purple album is finally, you know, heading towards being actually recorded. So, and I imagine it'll have to be pretty bloody good. You know, how much time has he had to rework and tweak arrangements and whatnot? So, hey, could be very interesting, and maybe I'll try and see if I can squeeze out of him a projected release date. Not like, you know, when you're first starting the process that you have any idea, but, you know, you can try. But anyway, I tell you what. Before we get into the stories for today, our good friend David from Maine is on the line. How you going, David? Welcome aboard.
Good evening, John.
How are you, my friend?
I'm doing good. I just wanted to mention on that Jeff Healey thing. Yeah, that guy was a revolutionary on guitar, and I think part of the thing was, When he got in the music industry and on the major labels, I think they, one of the problems with his records was he went to be too contemporary with his producers, and I think a lot of people didn't understand what a music genius he is. There was like more to him than just Angel Eyes and playing in Roadhouse.
Yeah, yeah, and I actually thought before I ended up not doing my show yesterday, I originally thought about, you know, grabbing a Jeff Healey track to use as the track of the day, but the only thing that I could get my hands on readily without doing anything more difficult was Angel Eyes. And even though I'm not that familiar, just because it, you know, there's so much music out there and things get by you, and especially when you're not living in the States where he would be having, you know, the most spotlight on him.
Right.
I'm not familiar with the jazz stuff that he was doing, so I decided not to do a track because I didn't really think that was a very good example of what he was about. And I you look at some of the old video clips and the way that they, you know, it was the teased out mullet and that whole kind of thing, and you could kind of tell. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying, man. I mean, He had all of this incredible talent, you know, and he never got kind of like the, I won't say he he got to be like a guitar legend, a semi legend, but he didn't get to be like the level like SRV or Eric Clapton like he should have been.
Yeah, I think he only got to the level in amongst the kind of the guitar player circles and those that cared to look a little deeper, probably. But that's the classic thing that happens with jazz and blues artists.
Yeah.
In the machine, they want to somehow turn them into pop artists when that's not really what they are. It's all about the music. And I did watch, because I heard you mention it yesterday, the clip for "While My Guitar Gently Weeps."
Yeah.
And it was funny, right after you mentioned that popped up on Crooks and Liars, that clip at YouTube. What a great version. I even found after that a live version of him doing it, which was just enough to make you sweat, especially the outro solo. I mean, he was a hell of a player. And, you know, I was sitting there watching a couple clips last night, and, you know, there. And believe me, I don't mean that this is any compensation for his blindness. However,
yeah.
the fact that he had the ability to use his thumb on the fingerboard, and the fact that he could actually fret more strings than I can, because I have a whole digit that doesn't get to play the game for most of the time.
Yeah.
And watching, and it's really wild. It was really wild to watch, because his thumb ends up doing very much what, for almost every other guitar player, the pinky has to do.
Yeah, I've always checked out him to a degree from afar. I mean, I listened to, like I said, I listened to a few of his records. I never listened to his jazz records, but I heard a sample of it, and he's amazing on trumpet, man. He's like a Louis Armstrong level. No, I might get.
Oh, I didn't know he was multi-instrumentalist.
Yeah, I guess he's a virtuoso. He can pick things up by ear, and he has a real love for jazz from the 30s and 40s. And I guess he was working with his protege vocalist, and you know, to pay the bills or whatever, to release a project, they did some standards. I think it was called Jazz Masters or something. And
oh, okay.
He's an amazing horn player too. I mean, you wouldn't even guess it was him.
You know, I can understand the mental leap when it comes to being, you know, like myself. You know, I'm a drummer, but I also can play guitar. You know, and from there I can play some keyboards, and from the guitar
right.
I can find my way on a mandolin or, you know, some other stringed instrument. But then to be able to make that jump from percussive string category to brass, that's a completely different animal.
I think the secret was he was always like a horn player when he was a kid. He always had instruments around, and since he was blind, made him work harder. I mean, there's always that common, there's a commonality with a lot of blind musicians who really break out, like Stevie Wonder, or even like Ray Charles, who could track himself and make him sound like a woman.
One of my favorite scenes in the film Ray.
Yeah, I mean, and they were able to do that. And, you know, I just, I hope someone does a really cool documentary on him, and people get to see what he was really like. I remember seeing him on Guitar Legends, and he just wailed. I mean, just an amazing player. And to me, I don't care what anyone says, he was up there with Hendrix, Clapton, anyone you can throw out, he was up there.
Yeah, and the other thing, the couple of articles that I read about his passing, there were a lot of quotes from a couple of his band members, and not only was seemed to be an amazing player, he also seemed to be a generally nice, warm human being who gave strength to so many other people, because he was fighting this cancer for a long time and still playing. You know, his last gig was only 4 weeks before he died. And he had been really sick before that, and the band member made the comment that they played this show, and at the beginning of it, you could see that he wasn't well. But by the end of the show, he looked so much more healthy and so much more alive because it was the music that fed his soul. And that obviously was a natural painkiller for him.
Yeah.
And you could tell that there was actually a whole, and this is what very often makes a musical project really, really go somewhere, is when there's an honest connection and obviously caring and to use a very simple term, but love between the people that are creating the music, because you are interchanging souls with one another when you are creating. If you really are creating.
Without a doubt. The other thing I wanted to mention real quickly is that new Nine Inch Nails album. I don't know if you had a chance to hear it yet.
I have to go and grab it. I haven't yet, but I will be getting it very, 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 very shortly, maybe even tonight.
I got to tell you, what Trent did was he just totally turned the industry upside down by releasing that album. First of all, let's put it this way. He had like five different options. You could get the $5 one, which would be the nine songs. Then you could get like the CD version, and you could download the CD at the same time, and that was like the $16 version. Then you had one that was like a $75. I mean, he learned from the Radiohead mistakes. But then he took it further. He had like a $300 version, a limited edition, and I printed up like 1,000, and it's already sold out. You go on eBay, and the $300 version is already up to $2,000. They're already selling out at $2,000, so...
That's no surprise at all. The guy is a marketing genius for one.
Yeah.
And my good friend Scott Barry was just on the last tour with Nine Inch Nails here in Australia doing monitors.
Right.
And he was talking about the fact that all this kind of without the label thing was starting to brew, and there were the reports from him in Sydney screaming about the price of his CD in Australia. I don't know if you remember this.
Oh, yeah.
Because he went in, going into some local bookstore, and Avril Lavigne is, $12, and his is $30. And the label basically said, well, that's because your audience is loyal. In other words, you're being screwed for your loyalty. Go steal the record. And the thing that Scott was explaining to me, he said, look, he said, for a long time now, because of the pay for member part of his website and the leaving USB drives in bathroom stalls with new music for punters to find at the gigs and things, the income from the records was secondary compared to the merchandise and the touring. And this is where the rest of the industry needs to wake up, and if they want to survive this new situation where, stuff can be traded so easily, they got to get back to the fact that the record is the promotion for the live show.
I'll tell you what was so interesting about this whole releasing this record. First of all, he didn't give anybody any warning. It's like almost 2 hours. It's all instrumental. Every single track is instrumental. Now, here's the other thing he did. You can download a wave version, and you, as a musician, can remix it. You have creative license.
This is the other thing. I know, and there's even a section of his website where people then upload their remixed versions of tracks. And Perfect Circle did very similar things to what Trent does, where, as the new album is being worked on, they'll put demo versions of new songs up and get feedback from the fans. When Perfect Circle did their first record, every time they got together and wrote a new song, they'd demo it, put it up on the website, and basically get a vote on it, whether the fans thought that it was a worthwhile track. And the fans had a lot to do with, trimming down what became the playlist for that album, and it's a fantastic record. And so I really think that Nine Inch Nails, Radiohead, the Saul Williams thing, we're seeing the future of what the music industry is going to be about in the next 20 years.
I'll tell you how shady this industry was. When the record came out, Ghosts, and people realized that they could get the record for free, people were putting out false press releases that people were getting the record for theft from off torrent sites, because that's how mad they were. He just released it, even though he wasn't on, even though he was not part of Interscope anymore, he had nothing to do with that label. He was still getting this this backlash, and they put up all these false press releases. And here's what he did. This is the kind of person Trent Reznor is, and this is how you know someone's real. He went to the torrent site that allegedly was downloading the links for the album, and there was a rumor that one of the names of Trent's torrent was it was Nine Inch Nails, and it was an official it was the official band torrent link. So he put the icon there to show the people that he was in support of the Pirate Bay, and now everyone's going to have to back off that story. He gave the record away for free.
I think it's guts, man. Oh yeah, it definitely takes guts, and it also goes to show what kind of a guy Trent is. Now, he might throw guitars on stage, he might have the occasional tantrum.
Yeah.
But again, you get this from people who are passionate about their art. And the statements that he made here in Sydney, you know, about, you know, how their loyalty, which he respects and adores, is being used against them by way of extortion. So by doing what he's done, he's definitely set the lines out that I do this for myself and the fans.
Mm-hmm.
And if the label doesn't understand that, the label can go for a walk. And I think it's a brilliant thing. You know, Prince started some of this, you know, over a decade ago, where he designed the musicians' agreement, which, you know, kind of was a new step when it came to getting away from the standard record deal. And that has done a great amount for protecting artists that can go to his website. It used to be there. And you can go and download the very document that he created for himself between him and Warner's. Not Warner's. Warner's was who screwed him on Purple Rain, but whoever he's with now.
And nobody knows people now.
Yeah, but it's purely distribution, because, you know, he's the kind of guy that can that has the means to, you know, produce, master, print, press, and then say, here, you can distribute. And that's basically what he's done, and both parties had the ability to pull out for any reason. And so he made this document openly available to all musicians and just be able to change the names.
Mm.
So, you know, I think this is all going to be good for music in the long run.
I think so, too. I think it opens the door for... I think it opens the door for all media. A lot of people who make movies, any kind of thing, anything that has to do with visual or sound media or radio shows or anything, you have to take a look at his, creative source or something. There's a website that he set up for artists, I guess. It's pretty amazing. The design of the site, the templates, and what you can go with and the direction of it. He has a lot of incredible web designers, that's for sure. And one last thing on Reznor. See, a lot of people don't realize is what he also did is he opened the door for a lot of electronic music from the UK to come here with his label Nothing Records, because what he did was he took the Warp Records imprint, which was an infamous label in the UK, which was releasing a lot of intelligent dance music at the time, where pretty much everything in the UK was just acid house and rap house and all that crap. But Trent decided, well, I'm going to take those records and I'm going to introduce them to the United States, and that's what he did. But that was before the internet too. So that's another thing about Trent. When he started his label and he started putting these people out, they weren't going to sell. They were lucky to sell 50,000. They were lucky to sell 40,000, 30,000. They didn't even have the money to tour, you know. But he still took that. He took that route, and he was like, "I'm still going to introduce these acts to the United States because I think they need to be heard." So that was another cool thing about him.
What a novel thought! Music just needs to be heard.
Well, you know, there is no excuse now. Trent and a lot of other people have proven it. Just put it up.
You
reap the benefits somehow when you figure out a plan for yourself, some kind of business model. You just got to keep on sculpting and shaping.
I'm kind of working on the same thing myself at the moment, you know. I have some goals about getting some, you know, some of my own material down. You know, doing parodies and stuff is all fun. But I haven't done anything, you know, original and what's me in,
right,
you know, over 10 years.
Wow.
And, you know, and so, you know, I mean, I was out there busking and doing all that kind of stuff, but, you know, it's been like 10 years since I actually, you know, was working on something with an actual goal in mind. So, you know, I've got this idea that in the next year I'll have the album done, because I mean I have the ability to do it, you know, more than the average musician, just because of my previous career as an audio engineer, and I have all the software and all the tricks and all that kind of stuff to do it with. So the only thing keeping me from doing it is me and actually
right.
getting down and writing. And so I am looking to do this over the coming months, and it really is a focus for me at the moment when I get time.
Well, that's cool.
But,
you know the head-on listeners, they can be the executive producers.
And you know, so you know, I'm looking into different ways to distribute and all that kind of stuff as I'm, you know, at the moment, you know, it's creating material, and you know, so I mean, there's at the moment there's about a half a dozen songs written, and you know, they need work, and I need to find more time to write, and I want to do this before I get too old, to be perfectly honest.
I'm sure with the proper inspiration that you have from the people around you, and just in life in general, you'll find you'll find right where you were. We'll pick up right where you were left off. So,
and what I'm going to find interesting about this process is the last time I was actively really writing in say a band situation,
right,
I was still nothing but the drummer. And since my band in Texas, you know, ended, God, it's 95 or something. That's when all of a sudden I got into the guitar thing. Now, I haven't hardly touched a drum kit in a decade. And
wow.
So that's something that I'm going to try and remedy. You know, traveling and moving and whatnot, drums are a hard thing to carry around. It's something had to, you know, I had to lighten the load, man. So, you know, at the moment I'm scrounging on eBay. I have a little shopping list of instruments that I need.
Right.
And the big key for me is a good electronic kit for triggering the thousands of acoustic drum samples that I've got, so that I can break away from, you know, programming drums out on a keyboard, which I can't stand, to actually playing them. And so, like, you know, I've got a checklist. And sometimes I don't really think people understand what a huge undertaking something like doing a record is. I mean, just the creation of the material before you even get on into how you produced it, how you distribute it, any of that. There can be, you know, years of work before you ever actually get the first sound down to hard disk or tape or however you're going to do it.
Right.
So, you know, we'll see if I'm able to pull this off. And watching what Trent is doing and watching the Saul Williams thing,
yeah.
actually is part of what gave me the kick in the ass to finally say, well, you know, it's time to, you know, it's late enough, shit, or get off the pot, you know, kind of thinking. And the two friends of mine that I've met down here, I don't know if you caught when I played some of Heidi and Rod's music. Rod's a harp guitarist.
Right.
And the fact that they, not even being technically savvy, have created a couple of really fine records and have created some really good music that is what they want to do. And I'm looking at it going, you know, I can do that.
Well, you know, John, when the time is ready, it's ready, and you just have to trust what your spirit tells you. And you know, people get caught up in the space of time with records. I mean, look, Sade comes along every 5 years. Steely Dan, well, they did come around every 20 years, but now they're coming around every 3 or 4 years. D'Angelo comes around, he's on his sixth year right now.
My favorite example is Tool. You know, it can be five years between drinks, but it's not going to be ready until it's ready.
That's right.
You know, as opposed to when you go back, you know, say to looking at like Van Halen, you know, there was that whole time in the beginning, you know, the first five records, it was a new album, maximum every 2 years, plus the huge amount of touring that they were doing, because there was obviously a bit of a turnover schedule. You know, they wanted to keep that machine going. You know, it was the largest touring act on the planet at the time, so they wanted to keep that machine rolling. Would we possibly have had better records down the line if they had been able to come to their, you know, blossoming in their own time than under some sort of schedule?
Right. I mean, one of my favorite bands is Secret Chiefs 3, and that's the guy who started Mr. Bungle with Mike Patton. Anyways,
I love Mr. Bungle.
Yeah, anyways, he's been working, he works on the artwork for his album for like 2 years. They get out library books and research, and they fill it with ciphers and codes and all kinds of cryptic symbols and everything, and tied together with all the sequencing. It's just amazing. I mean, the time and the energy, like they have like woodwork on the album and stuff, where they cross. I mean, it's really articulate and intricate, like Tool's artwork.
Yeah, yeah. It's all encompassing. I also was getting a very slightly different but similar vibe when I was talking to Travis Meeks earlier. You know, that it is his, you know, it's Days of the New is not really a band. It is a project. And
right.
He also, you know, he does the album covers himself. You know, all of that stuff all comes down, you know, because he's also into visual arts as well. So, you know, all along the same lines, it's that taking complete creative control over your body of work, which is amazing.
You know who's sick with that? Brandon from Incubus. His artwork is amazing. I don't know if you've checked out his gallery, but I gotta send you his stuff. You'd just be like, oh my god.
I did read some of his poetry once.
I'm not really that much into Incubus, but I'm just telling you, his artwork is like otherworldly. It's, when you see it, you'd just be like, what the hell? Why did they put in that crappy album cover? But get him to draw what he has in his basement, for God's sake. I mean, but you know, this is what I was talking about how the reason why you don't see great artwork is because they want it to be cookie cutter. They want it to sell X amount of records, and they really don't want you to break out and be that artist that can sell that crazy amount of records that they couldn't do with you. They want to keep you on that leash always. So you're going to sell this many records. I mean, they'll take one artist who will be the superstar, but everyone else will be like, you know what it's like? It's like Best Buy. You're all lost leaders. Get out there.
And I still remember. I don't know if you remember a band from Jersey about 20 years ago called Soraya.
Soraya.
They had one blues rock kind of hit on a first album, and they seriously were the next big thing, and the first record was really, really quite good, a bit poppy, but all really good players. Sandy Soraya, the singer, was just fantastic, and I happened to know Sandy via, she was the cousin of a girlfriend of mine, but I moved to Texas and I found the second record in a record store, and it was like a year after it had been released, and I'm going, man, I didn't even hear this thing came out. So I make a couple phone calls,
right.
And I come to find out that, you know, not only did they have huge amounts, I mean, they had budget for days.
Right.
On the second record, production was just completely over the top and schmick, but it was a really good record. Well, when it was done, it seemed to be considered too much competition for a few other mainstream artists. So the $60,000 video clip and the album both got put up on the shelf.
That is such a common story.
Yeah, and so, you know what, you can't have another really good artist out there? Are you know, so, like, what? You're afraid that people hearing, you know, this blues rock with this, and the piano player, the keyboard player was brilliant, you know, classical pianist kind of, you know, turning rock and roll kind of thing.
Yeah.
But, you know, so what, was this going to compete too much with Whitney Houston?
You know,
is this what you were...
That's interesting you say that, because the Wooten Brothers were just like that. They made a record on Arista that completely sucked. And they always thought the reason why they made it so sound so crappy was because they didn't want those guys out there being the monster band that they could have been, surpassing everyone, because that's how... I mean, the Wootens were... They were crazy. They were like Jackson 5... but they could really play. I mean, not to like Jackson 5, but I mean, come on. The only one that was really playing was Tito to begin with.
Yeah, I was about to say that Tito could play.
Yeah, Tito could play. But you know that whole thing, I mean, so many people get caught up in are getting caught up in what I call the MySpace bill, where they think if you just put your song out and you get a few people, a lot of the record companies are there, and it's almost like it's really incestuous now on that place. Everywhere it just seems all the comments seem like fake and really desperate. Like, yo, your track sounds hot, and then you click on the guy's link, and it'll lead back to the management page and.
I have a MySpace that I hardly use.
Yeah, I know.
And most of the times when I get a new friend invite, it's obviously some, you know, porn spammer that's already had their account deleted by moderators.
Yeah. Yeah. I actually
go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead.
I was just going to say that I came across another website which seems to be what is attempting as a bit of a musical MySpace crossed with a talent contest. So basically an open talent contest. It's still running in beta version. And so I signed up and set up an account, and I was kind of curious to see what was there, and I figured I'd stick one of the parodies up there for the hell of it. And, spammers get to everything first, man. And, you know, this is supposed to be for, you know, artists, actors, musicians, filmmakers, blah, blah, blah. Well, so far, I go through looking to see what people are, what people have done. And 9 out of 10 of them are some sort of pseudo, I'm not doing porn, but I'm a model, ha, ha, ha. And, and it took me like almost 15 minutes to find the first page that had somebody's media on there, which was a little San Francisco Francisco filmmaker, and he had a great little film on countercultures, which is excellent. So, you know, this could all be part of the beta thing that, you know, they're still filtering this stuff out. It's probably still small. They probably still have a very small team running behind it. So I'm going to watch this one because this has been set up, I guess, as probably a direct competition to, say, MySpace.
Right.
But then having this community that votes on each other for these competitions. I'm not exactly sure how it all is going to work out yet. I just signed up for it last night. But, yeah, I was sitting there, I'm going through, and, you know, I do web stuff, and I'm going, oh, it just figures, you know, it's new, and the first people to find it are all the porn spammers, you know, and all really dodgy usernames, you know, kissy kissy chicky and stuff like that.
Well, I don't want to keep you too much. I'm just going to say I have to send you this blog. You'd be really interested in. It's called Music Thing. I don't know if you've ever been in Music Thing, but it's one of the best blogs, man. And what Music Thing is about is it takes you into the obscure world of music production on the eccentric side with a lot of the instruments of the 70s, 80s, and 90s, and people who have invented their own instruments and musicians out there doing it from around the world. And what this guy does, he blogs regularly, and he features a lot of different producers, from Kraftwerk to Prince to, and they just talk about gear, and he has a really big following for this blog, and it's really, there's a nice layout to it. And he has this amazing, and when I say amazing article out right now on why everything, it's called Why Everything Sounds the Same in the Music Business. And I gotta tell you, you gotta get into it one of your shows this week, because he nails it completely.
Yeah, send the link off, because I have some opinions on that very issue myself.
I think you'll be singing in an extra harmony when you read.
Yeah,
when you read
yeah.
That. I mean, he'll be right in tune with what you were saying about it too.
You know, for everything that the technology has done for musicians.
Yeah.
You then have to work, you know, you can get all these really clean, wonderful sounds really easy now, but then everyone has the same samples. So unless you take the time to work on them and make them yours, you end up sounding like 60% of everything else out there that's being made. You know, it's like, oh, I have GarageBand. And I'll use the rock drum kit, and I'll use their electric piano. you know, and I mean that is the reality of it. I can tell you when I do the parody stuff, you know, I have all these wonderful samples.
Right.
But before it gets mixed down, you know, I end up recording all those samples down into like a regular track, and I end up going and then processing them. Just the way that I would, you know, when it comes to, like, say, drums or bass guitar, the way that I would in a real-world studio, so that I can contour them and make them something other than this clean, what really is supposed to be a very flat noise in most instances, and you need to bring life from them. So, yeah, you know, it's great to have tools, but then again, you got to learn to be creative with those tools, or else you're just going to be another one in the list.
I completely agree, and I'm looking at the clock, and you got to talk fast to get to your
It's all right,
topic.
Man. It's okay. It was a music show anyway. It was going to be like that, and it's always good to talk to you because, you know, we can go on about these things, and it's good
yeah,
stuff.
Likewise.
And, you know...
Well,
folks get tired of heavy stuff all the time, you know.
Oh,
and sometimes,
yeah.
You know, at this hour, it's kind of nice to talk about other stuff. So that's fine with me, man.
Just one thing that I'd like you to talk about one of these days on this week. I'd like to get your opinion on the ELF burning. So if you could talk about that week, that would be cool.
Okay. Okay. If you've got some stuff to send me on it, that would be really handy. And I will, and you know, maybe we'll get into that tomorrow before the week runs out.
All right, man. Sounds good.
All right, David. Great to talk to you again, man. You take care of yourself.
Great. You too.
All All right, and that was David from Maine, and good old Trent Reznor, always kind of sticking it to him. Just kind of checking how much time we got left. Oh, we got a few minutes here. okay, where do we go to from here? okay, since we're running short on time, there's links to this stuff on today's show post. And Texas Betsy sent me a couple of really great little links, and I suggest going to the show post so you can see the photos that go with them. But there are two. I'm a big fan of reusing things. Whether it's you know, carving up a plastic drink bottle to use it as a seedling starter for the garden or whatever. I love seeing things reused before they're disposed of. And this is actually one for Gail, my missus, and she'll love this. The first one here is someone found a very, very clever way to take old CD cases and turn them into mini greenhouses. And it's really simple. Remove the black half off of three of them. You use four. Tape the four clear bits into a box and let the hinged black bit go over the top. Stick it over a seedling in your garden. Instant greenhouse. And, I mean, we do stuff like that here in the garden here, with just using bottles and, you know, bits of plastic and whatnot. And so, you know, who needs to go out and buy little mini greenhouses from the garden shop? We all have a bunch of, you know, from bad CD burns and things, CD gel cases all over the place. And the other one, and I thought this was just fantastic, and like I said, you got to go to the website and follow the links for this stuff because they're just great. Someone's discovered a very, very neat trick. Like I said, this is the silly stuff, but I figure I'll do this since we're running low on time. But I really thought that this was bloody groovy. Someone has figured out that on your average blender, you know, the assembly that's on the bottom, the blade assembly that's on the bottom of the big jug, well, that has the same exact thread as a mason jar. So they say here in this little piece, and it's from Kerbly.com. Both of these are from Kerbly. Says, check this out. Most electric blenders can accept standard mason jars in place of the huge container with which it comes. Simply unscrew the blade housing from the carafe and attach it to your mason jar, the larger wide mouth ones. Then place on your blender or liquidizer, as they say in England, and blitz away. This is great for smaller amounts like in homemade salad dressing, nut butters, or crushing spices, as they say. But hey, you know, blend the thing up, take the attachment off, close it up, stick the lid on. Brilliant! I love that kind of stuff. And I thought the CD cases thing was pretty genius, too. and so, I mean, and these are these small things where you can help slow down all these petrochemicals and whatnot, like with the CD cases, from going to landfill quite so quickly. And with the mason jars, it's about saving energy with the washing up, the heating of the hot water. You know, it's every little bit you can do to make a difference in consumption and all that. And you all know that because you've been listening to this program for a long time, and most of our audience is sensitive to the issues of our environment. So, I think that's, you know, finding new uses for old things. You know, and I sit there and I don't know if it's happening in the States, but it's happening here that, you know, there's becoming a real turn against the old bottled water thing, because people are starting to figure out that, hey, for every liter of bottled water, it took like 11 liters of water and, you know, so many bloody pounds of CO2. And do you really need to do that when you can just get water from the tap? Because the impact of all these bottles is huge. I mean, we happen to like a thing that you get down here called ginger beer. It's like a soft drink. It's kind of like ginger ale on steroids. And you know, almost every week I kind of cringe going out to the recycling, you know, half a dozen glass bottles. And I'm going, you know, all that energy just to get this liquid here to me, and then off it goes to, thankfully not the trash, to the recycling. But still, it's a lot of weight, it's a lot of, you know, makes me want to brew my own. And Bob makes a good point that tap water is usually more pure than bottled water. But hey, there you go. That's the reality in which we live these days. The consumer / disposable society. Excuse me as I make an adjustment. Sit down. Bloody warm in here. I tell you, we've had so not the Australian summer this year. And it's really funny. You know, we've already officially, you know, clicked into what they call autumn, March 1st. They use as the line drawn in the sand here. And it seems like we've had more warm days since it became officially fall than we did this summer. And it's been a bit of a relief, I have to say, but I don't think it's going to last very long because it's all purely because we're in a La Nina year for the first time in quite a few. So anyway, I think we should wrap it up here, Bob. I think we're good. I don't have all the other stuff. We'll get into some of the other stuff that I had maybe tomorrow. Because I had some other good stuff, but it was a little bit more involved, and just didn't have the time to get there. So thanks to Bob for producing. Thanks to Scott Berry at B1 Louder Productions for the music.
And the sign said, long-haired freaky people need not apply. So I took my hair up under my hat, and I went in to ask him why.
We, in our office, consistently co-sponsored Barney
And now, from Washington, the Inside Scoop. All the news the government does not want you to hear. Now, here's your host on the Inside Scoop, Mark Levine.
Good afternoon, America. Welcome to the Inside Scoop. If you stayed up till about 3 in the morning yesterday night, Eastern Time, as I did, you finally got the results that you've been waiting for from last night's exciting primaries and caucuses in Texas and Ohio, Vermont, and Rhode Island. And the answer is no answer. It's kind of like the 2000 Bush v. Gore.